Okay, I would like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Nate. Oh, where is Nate? Oh, there you are. Hey, Nate, and you're from?
Orchid.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Nate Alcoholic.
Hey, Nate.
Grateful to be here. I want to thank the Solving Fellowship and all who have service commitments at this meeting. I have found it in my own recovery that service commitments keep us sober. I don't know how many times still, especially in my first year, where I had a bad day, I was wanting to get loaded like I did time and time again, and I had a service commitment that night, and I made it, and another day passed, you know. I also want to welcome Sarah to this way of life. If it's your first time or you're in and out like I was for 6 years, I hope you keep coming back. I'm grateful for that second tradition. Because me, for years, I would come in here knowing I had a problem, but I didn't want to do anything about it. You know, you guys would suggest for me to get a sponsor, start working the steps. And I would do half of it, or I would do that and not that. You know, you said get honest. That was tough for me. And you know, I went in and out for 6 years. So I hope you keep coming back, and I hope you find what I have found. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with all my heart. Everything positive in my life today is a result of this program. And if you would have told me 3 years ago, my sobriety date is July 26, 2016. The only time I could get more than 3 days on my own was in treatment. I went to treatment 3 times, and I could get 30 days, maybe 50 days, and then I try to do it on my own again. And there goes Nate, you know, same song, same dance. I want to thank the Orchid contingent for coming down here. I love my fellowship up there in Orchid. These are the men and women who I've learned everything about recovery, sobriety. I want to thank Kate for coming down here, my partner in crime. I definitely know that, you know, I'm hard to love, you know, she has stayed by my side through thick and thin, early recovery, you know, and you know, I really appreciate that. I have a sponsor, Bob F., who also has a sponsor, and he has knowledge of working the 12 steps, and I try to do what he does. The perfect example of a man who tries his best to put God first, others second, and self third. And if I could one day grow into becoming a man like Bob, you know, I think I would be doing pretty good. You know, and he also likes to drink a lot of milkshakes. So my milkshake intake has increased like 1,000% since I got sober. You know, and that's the other thing about it is we have fun and sobriety. You know, I thought that when I first came in here, you know, my life was over. You know, this was going to be boring. And it was boring for 5 years, and that's why I went in and out. Because I didn't do anything about my disease. I didn't treat my disease. I find it that when you stay in the herd and you work the program to the best of your ability and you help others, you'll reap the benefits of this program. And it's that inside job. And we have fun. This is a sufficient substitute, you know. And if I didn't have fun or enjoy sobriety, I wouldn't be here. For an alcoholic drug addict like myself who I have to have, you know, that gratification. You know, I have to feel good inside. I still do. If I didn't get the benefits, I wouldn't stay here. What it was like, I grew up in a small town in Nebraska. I'm a Nebraska boy. to a very loving family. Both my parents worked very hard for our family. They loved us unconditionally. And I always felt a little different, just like most of us did. It didn't matter. I do know it now that I was bodily and mentally different. But growing up, something was off in me. I had that anxiety. I had that untreated alcoholism, really. I was irritable, discontent. I remember being 8 and being on a football team. And that game, they wanted to start me at running back. And I had so much fear, like, go over me that instead of playing in that game, I acted like I was hurt. I sat on the sidelines because I was overcome with fear. I didn't know what to do about it. But I did find an outlet, and that was sports for me. When I was on that field, football, baseball, I felt okay. But the moment I got off of that field, I didn't feel a part of. Something was off, and that's the way it was until I found my solution, and that was booze. I had my first drink at 13, and it was me and my two other buddies, and I still remember that night. I took that first drink, and everything felt okay after that. Just like most of us, I was treating my disease, and I could look the world in the eyes. I could feel a part of. And the thing about it, too, is my other friend who took that first drink with me, he was exactly the same as me, and he's also an alcoholic like us. Our other friend took that drink and didn't like the feeling, so he stopped. He's a cop now. So, I'm bodily and mentally different. That's a perfect example right there. We are bodily and mentally different, Once I take that first drink, I can't stop. And I'm powerless over my behavior and how much I drink. So I start drinking, get into high school. I start, kind of excelling in football. After practice, we'd go booze cruising down the dirt roads in Nebraska. Jump in the river, jump in the lake. It was fun. I had a great time. I ended up getting hurt my senior year of football. I injured my back. The doctor prescribed me pain pills. I'm going to respect Alcoholics Anonymous, keep my share to mostly alcohol. When I say alcohol, it's everything for me. Because I used to have alcohol here and drugs here, they were separate. Everything's the same for me because for years I knew I was powerless over drugs. But with alcohol, it was hard for me. So I got prescribed pain pills. Started taking that to extreme. I loved the way it made me feel. Same thing with booze. And right when my prescription ran out, I started stealing them. Because I needed more. So I'm an alcoholic drug addict. And what we would do is we would drive around town, act like we broke down in front of a house, knock on the door, ask to use the restroom, went inside, went in the bathroom, medicine cabinet. So that was my first dealer, was a medicine cabinet. So those were my first dealer, But I would find any way to treat my disease once again. I ended up going to the University of Nebraska, and that didn't last too long. I had different priorities, and my first the night before my first year of college, I said I'm going to stay in. I'm going to stay in. I'm not going out. It's my first day of college, I got to start going on the right path. Long story short, I ate a bunch of shrooms, and I didn't make it to my first day of class. You know, and that was it. You know, I swore off. I was not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. All it took was an offer. Boom. Let's go. I was able to somewhat get through my first semester in college. And then after that, I dropped out. And in the span of 3 years, you know, I went to my first treatment center. Like I said, I wasn't ready, you know. I went to my first treatment center. I met a good friend of mine at the time, Jordan, and we became rehab buddies. I started learning about this disease, though. You know, I don't knock rehab. I went to 3 of them. Did I ever stay sober after any of them? No. But they introduced me to you guys. We went to meetings when I was in treatment. I wasn't ready. What I would do is I would go into treatment go into treatment, say I was going to do all these things. You know, I heard them say, you know, it's suggested that you get a sponsor. It's suggested that you start working the steps. It's suggested that you get service commitments. And I would say I was going to do all these things in treatment. I'd do every single one. I'm good. I got it. And by the end of my stay, I'd be the counselor. I'd be another counselor telling other people what to do. Yeah. No, you got to do it. You know, I didn't have any experience. This is much of BS, really, you know. Would get out and maybe do it for a week, maybe see you guys for a week, maybe get a sponsor, maybe start working the steps, but it wasn't honest and thorough. I saw the steps as homework. If my sponsor at the time suggested, you know, say, hey, I suggest you know, get done with step one before Friday, and we'll go over it, you know, that night. Thursday night, I would get something down on paper and then meet up with them. I wasn't ready to get honest. I would go back out. I would treat my disease because I wasn't treating my disease in here. I wasn't treating it with the spiritual side that we talk about in here. And I was still trying to run the show. So I'd go back out, go on the run for a while, and run out of money again. Go back to mom and dad, you know, tell them what happened, that I'm done. I'm done. Please help me. They would take me back to treatment. You know, the second time I went to treatment, I had never seen my father cry. I still remember, I don't ever want to forget this, but I still went out after this. He checked me in. They weighed me. I was 121 pounds, sunken up, dying from this disease. And I saw the look on my dad's face, you know, and he held it together while we were in there. And then he walked down the parking lot and I looked out the window, you know, and my role model, the man I love more than anything, you know, was out in the parking lot bawling like a baby, you know, because he saw what this disease was doing to his son. And my dad stopped drinking when I was 3. And he did it on his own. You know, whether he's an alcoholic like one of us or he's a heavy drinker, whatever, but he did it on his own and I saw him do it on his own. So I thought I could do it on my own. That was my role model, you know, and he would always say, you know, you just don't drink and you work hard. That's just two models, and he was able to just to get through it. So I tried that, you know, and it didn't work out too well for me. You know, I'm able now to accept the fact that, you know, whatever works for him, but that doesn't work for me, you know, and I need all of this, you know. So same thing happened, same song, same dance. I get out of treatment again. A couple years go by. Because every time I would get out, I think, I need to go back to college. I need to get the girl back. I need to get the job back. And then if I have any time, I'll go to meetings. You know, I'll maybe do what you guys are suggesting. You know, and that's what I thought. You know, I was sick. I was spiritually sick, trying to run the show. And so I go back into another treatment, and this time I go in there. I think I worked. I worked steps 1 through 9 in treatment, you know. So I thought I was on 10 when I got out, and I got a sponsor. And by this time, my parents didn't want me back home. My sister wouldn't let me stay with her. You know, I got out, and I was living at. I was homeless in Omaha for 2.5 weeks, and on March 16th, 2016, I get a phone call from my brother who lives out here in California, down in Orange County. He said, "Hey, you can move out here if you stay sober." And I was thinking to myself, "I'm gonna be in California. I'm gonna be on the beach. I mean, this would be awesome." That's exactly what I needed. It's this state, this city. This is why I keep going out. So I remember it being March 16th because on St. Patrick's Day, I flew out to Orange County, 2016. And I remember that because I got on the flight and they said, as a result of being St. Patrick's Day, every airline passenger gets a free drink on us today. And I didn't drink, though. I did not drink. You know, got off that flight down in Newport Beach and going to meetings for a while. Got a sponsor. Wasn't honest. Wasn't thorough. Half-assed this program and got the same result. Had a bad day at work. My untreated alcoholism was telling me that I could have a couple beers. Got a couple 40s, because that's a couple beers, right? That's how we do it. Once again, you know, I was out on the run on the streets of Anaheim for 2 weeks, you know, just going to hotel room, doing things I always said I wouldn't do, you know, doing things that I never thought my disease would take me to. And I'm a runner, so my idea was to sneak into my brother's house one night, get all my stuff, load it in my car, hit the road, and drive back to Nebraska or wherever I was going. I was going to run again and show up, and my brother had been waiting for me, you know. And he said, if you get in your car, I'm calling the cops, because I was loaded. And he said, "How about we go to Santa Barbara tomorrow, and I'll check you into a detox." And at this time, I had already been to 8 or 9 detoxes, you know. I said sure, because I had nowhere else to go. I didn't have anywhere else to go. Mom and Dad weren't going to let me back home if I drove out there. So we drove up to Santa Barbara, and I checked into Cottage Hospital for a week. And I was in 5 East for a week, you know. And you guys brought a panel in, Alcoholics Anonymous. My third day, brought in a meeting, and you guys talked about the contempt prior to investigation. And for the first time in a meeting, I was listening. I always heard what you guys were saying, but I never fully listened. I see it now as I was at a point of that gift of desperation we talk about. I was out of answers. And this other member talked about that contempt prior to investigation. What I heard was, "Have you ever gave this program a chance?" And that's exactly what he asked me after the meeting. And I looked him in the eyes, and for once I was honest and said, "No, I haven't. I haven't." So I was there for a week. Another suggestion was to move up to Santa Maria, where I didn't know anybody. I didn't have anywhere to go, though, and move into a sober living house. So I move up into Santa Maria, sober living house. Bob hates it when I call it sober living. He says it's a halfway house. From where he's from, it's a halfway house. Anyway, actually, backtracking just a hair, another member from Santa Maria drove down and picked me up at Cottage Hospital that day I checked out. And it was Jose Daniel, and he had just celebrated a year recovery, and he was on fire. He was on fire for this program, and I remember walking out of the doors and seeing him pull up in his little car. He had a big old smile on his face, and I was like, he's like Nate. I was like, oh my goodness, here we go. And the first thing I asked him, the first thing I said to him was, can you stop at a gas station so I can get a pack of cigarettes and a Red Bull? That was the first thing I said to Jose. And he did it. He stopped. He stopped. And I don't remember too much of that ride home. You know, I was still in a fog, still coming off those detox meds. And but I'll always remember that. You know, I was wondering to myself why he was doing it then, and now I know. He was doing what we do. We help each other out. That's how we get out of self. You know, he's being of service. And get into the house. And I have a sponsor, and for the first time I start honestly working these steps, and with starting with step one, and I found that I was not a very good manager in my life. That second part, step one, is so important for a guy like me, because I thought when I stopped drinking I could manage everything, and that's why I keep going out. Getting to step two. In the past, when I would hear the word God, I would completely zone out, shut. It would just completely shut me out of a meeting. And with step two, I was able to see that, you know, how is your way working out? How is your way of running the show working out? Do you think that maybe you could be willing to believe that there's something bigger than you? Just willing. That's it. But first, it was you guys. It was a fellowship. You know, because I would go to meetings, and at the end, when we lock arms, I would just look around, and that was the power grid in myself that I needed. You know? And I started working step three, and making that decision. You know, that step three prayer that we talk about. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Self, self, self. That's the problem. I remember doing that third step with my sponsor up on Orchid Hill and feeling the weight lifted off my shoulders like I never have to be alone ever again. In that moment, I had that acceptance we talk about. And I got a job. The only experience I had before this was working in warehouses or restaurants or doing little part-time jobs when I was going to school. I got a job doing construction, working up by Hearst Castle on Highway 1, bridge work. And I didn't know anything about construction. And they gave me a list of all these tools to get. And I get up there, and I didn't know anything. And the foreman that I had was just, he had been doing it for 40 years. He was like, who is this kid you brought me? He was belittling me. He was on me. And I was in my first 2 months. I was already just insane, not wanting to live, right? But I would wake up every morning. I worked with my sponsor at the time, so we would drive up an hour and a half in the mornings. He would have a speaker tape on, and I'll always remember that. But with my foreman, this was my first experience of a resentment. I didn't know what a resentment was before I came in here. And I was at a meeting. You guys were talking about resentments. Someone said, if you have a resentment towards somebody, flip it to page 552, and it'll tell you exactly what to do. So I went home that night, flipped it to page 552. It said, you know, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, pray for that, their health, their prosperity, and their happiness. Do it for 2 weeks, even when you don't want to, and you will be free of it. And he was the first guy I tried it on. I said, let's see how this works. So that night I prayed, you know, for his health, his prosperity, his happiness. I showed up the next day to work, and he wasn't there. And they had sent him to another job. And I remember thinking about, oh my goodness, like, like here we go. Unfortunately, that's not how it always works, but now, just this last week at work, you know, I'm working for a different outfit now down in Santa Barbara, and this coworker got under my skin, and I called up Bob. Me and Bob talked about it. I flipped it to page 552, prayed for him, and I'm free of it now. You know, and I show up to work the next day, and I was like, man, he's really behaving himself today. What's gotten into him? No, it all starts with me. You know, I have those expectations, I'm going to get let down. You know, it starts with that acceptance. And I know this meeting ends at 9:45, right? Okay. So, I mean, I've been sharing about what it's like now, but as a result of doing what you guys have taught me and showed me, you know, I've been very active in my recovery just because I just learned from guys in the program, we either treat our disease or we don't. We either grow or we go. You know, when I came in, you know, they said, we don't care how you feel, we care what you do. And I have found it that I can whine all I want, but if I don't do anything about it, nothing's going to change. And we had a really good speaker up in Orchid not too long ago, and she said, yeah, you can whine all you want, but help us pick up these chairs at the end of the meeting while you're whining about it. And that stuck out to me. And what I try to do on a daily basis is I get up in the morning, and that God that I didn't believe in when I first started, as a result of working the 12 steps, just like it says in step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, as a result of working the steps, I have had a spiritual awakening where I have a God working in my life today where I know I'm never alone. As long as I stay close, because I've made a lot of mistakes these last 3 years, a lot of mistakes. And thankfully, I've got honest about it. You know, I had some nuggets that I was holding on to, you know, those nuggets that we talk about, and I didn't want to get honest, you know, and that shame and guilt ate me up, and I almost drank, you know, but thankfully, I didn't, and I got honest, and that's where we grow, you know, in my opinion. The first time I went through the steps, I kind of flew over 6 and 7, and I found it 6 and 7, it's just like what it says, it separates the men from the boys. And Bob and I did a lot of work on 6 and 7. He a lot of work. And because I have these defects that block me from you and God. And when I'm trying to run the show, it can cause a lot of destruction if I'm in sobriety, you know. And what I try to do, too, is I try to read, it's only one sentence, the top of page 20 every morning. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon the constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Because I'm selfish and self-centered. And I got to remind myself on a daily basis. I got to surrender to this program and my God that's working in my life. You know, that I don't know anything. You know, I'm here to be his hands and feet. And you know, I ask him, you know, if there's a situation where I can be of service, you know, to help me be aware of that. And I try to hit at least one big book study a week. one men's stag, which that's my home group. It's the Thursday night men's stag in Orchid. Goes to any length group, and it's at 6:30. And I've had a commitment at that meeting since I got sober for that reason. You know, right when I came in, Lee basically told me that I'm doing the coffee of the timer. I can't remember what it was. And I'll forever be grateful for that because I was in self. I have to get out of self somehow, and you know, and do that. And then I try my best, like my sponsor does, and like the men and women in the program who I look up to, keep our primary purpose to be there for the man and woman who's still sick. And the thing about working with others is the bright spot of my recovery. Seeing men come in here like I was, beaten down, spiritually sick, not wanting to live, having all that fear, seeing them buy into this and start getting busy and start putting the action in their recovery and seeing the lights come on, seeing it go from here to here, is the bright spot of my recovery. Edgar just celebrated 1 year. And I tell my guys, you know, you're helping me more than I'm helping you. I can tell you that right now. They might not see it, but someday they will, because guys were telling me that too when I first came in. I go, what do you mean? But now I get it. You know, I might be stuck in my crap, and I get a phone call. That's all it takes, you know. And 3 minutes. I had just recently got a job down in Santa Barbara, and when I first got it, actually the night before my first day, I got a call and I was asked to speak at this meeting. And that night, I was in my head about, what if they don't like me at work? Blah, 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 blah. My mind was just going off. And I get a phone call, solving number, answered it. Connie, you know, asked me to come down here, and that's a perfect example of God always being on time. He's always on time. Stuck in my head, and he presents himself. Now, this is my primary purpose, you know. For a guy that couldn't hold a job more than 3 months, you know, getting another opportunity and great opportunity down in Santa Barbara, you know. I was whining about the drive at first. Now I have an hour in the mornings to get the right size, you know, to ask God to direct my thinking and my actions, meditate. And then I have a great day at work. Sometimes I don't. On the way home, I have an hour too, so I'll call Bob. You know, he hears me a lot at night, you know, or Edgar will call me, Mike will call me, you know, and we speak the language of the heart. And we speak the language of the heart in here, and we do it together, you know. I heard this my very first month at a speaker meeting, and it's always resonated with me, and I'm going to end with this. There's no amount of pain that cannot be healed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was so profound to me. And that night I went home to the halfway house and finished my fourth step because I was on fire. God was speaking to me through this woman. And that's been my experience. We walk through hell together. You know, we do it together. But we have to take the action to fill a part of this thing. You know, I can say that you know, I don't fill a part of this thing, all this stuff, but what am I doing? You know, am I showing up early and talking to the newcomer? Am I going around the room shaking the hands of other members? You know, those are the things that I do to fill a part of. And there's always something that I can do in regards to that. And that's where I get my results. So I want to thank you all for being here tonight, being a part of my sobriety, and God bless you all. Thank you.
Nate, as a token of our appreciation.